Okay, we are starting a new book of the Bible. It's a pretty short book, and I would wager to say probably people have never studied this before. Possibly, if you have, it would be unusual. The book of Jude is what we're going to look at. It's the second to last book in the Bible. And the book of Jude is kind of a unique book for a few different reasons. One of the reasons is this, and you're going to find right out in the first verse, that Jude, everybody's like, well, who is Jude, right? Well, Jude, or Judas, also could have been called Judas, likely were exchanged as names. Well, he's the brother of James, it says in there. Well, okay, who's the brother of James, right? Who's James? If you look and if you do some research, you will find that it is very, very likely, and we know that James was Jesus' half-brother, okay? Because couldn't be a full-blood brother because he was only born of Mary, right? But it appears like James was, that wrote the book of James, was Jesus' half-brother. And it mentions in the Bible where James and Judas were Jesus' brethren, okay, or his brothers. Okay? So it is very likely that this man, Jude, or Judas, which probably, why wouldn't he be called Judas regularly? Yeah, I mean, right? How many people are going to name their kid Judas now? That's not a real popular name. There, that one actually gets your theory there, okay? Right? Not a lot of people are going to be called Judas, and I don't think he wanted to be even mixed up in that. But Jude was his name, or Judas, all right? So he's a half-brother of Jesus. So let's start in on, and we're going to see what Jude has to say. We'll start in the book of Jude. There's only one chapter. And we're just going to go through some of the verses tonight of the first chapter, okay? So, Jason, you want to read the first verse, please?
Jude, a servant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, to those who are called, who are beloved in God the Father, and kept safe for Jesus Christ.
Okay, so what does he claim that he is to Jesus?
Servant.
A servant, all right? And that's a tough thing. Right? That's a tough thing to say, hey, I'm a servant of my brother, unless if your brother is Jesus. All right? And you have seen what Jesus has done, and you understand what Jesus has done. So, most all of the New Testament was written far after when Jesus died. Okay? So, his whole life has been done. All right? They've put together their thoughts of their lifetime, but Jude would have lived longer than Jesus. So when he comes in there, he realizes what Jesus was. He knows what Jesus was. He realized he got the privilege of growing up in the household with God, okay? Which is a pretty unique household. Only ever happened once. So if you were one of the people that grew up in that household, then maybe you might have a few things to say. Not a lot. This guy does not have a lot, all right, to say. But let's go on to verse number two.
Mercy to you and peace and love be multiplied.
All right. So what does he want? He wants mercy and peace and love. to who? Who's he writing to? We've who?
Me.
You, yes, you. He doesn't have a specific group of people except people that believe in God. All right? His is not like the book of Romans written to the Roman church that we say, oh, we learn lessons from, or the book of Corinthians, or Thessalonians, or Ephesians. Okay, we learned about Paul's journeys and things like that, but he wrote all these letters. Even the book of Timothy is written specifically to Timothy. Or Peter, 1st and 2nd Peter are written to specific people. Even the book of Acts and Luke, Dr. Luke writes them to people. Okay? As here's my treatise, I want you to look at this. All right? I want you to understand this. This is a more general thing. He's got something to say to the Christians out there, because he's noticed something's been happening. All right? Verse number 3. Wherever we left off.
Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you for the common salvation, it was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered.
Okay, so his purpose, see, when Jude sat down, he said, I'm going to write this book, and I'm going to write about salvation, all right? The common salvation. I'm going to write about how great it is, because I know what it is to live with Jesus, and I know what it is to be forgiven, and I know what it is to have all of these great things. He says, and I was going to write you about that. But I couldn't write you about that. When I saw what was happening, I realized you needed to do something. You needed something much more than a letter of encouragement. You needed to know something. There's something really bad happening. Right? Something has snuck in to your groups of people. And those people, you've had somebody infiltrate your groups of people, and I've got to write you about them because you need to do something. And it said it at the very last thing. What does he want you to do? The last phrase of the verse you just read. It's not a word we use too often.
Contend.
All right? Contend. I want you to contend. And what does contend mean? Josiah's got a little red robe that he puts on. And he's 4, and he tightens it all up, and he wears the hood, he puts it over top of him. And I tell him, and I call him the contender, because he looks like something with his red hooded robe on. What does he look like? No. Not. No. No. It's a sport. Not quite. You're getting closer. A boxer. Okay, and what does a boxer do?
They fight.
And you could call them contenders. Right? They are contenders. They're fighters. All right? So if you're a contender, you are a fighter.
Shit, contender.
Right? So Josiah, looks like a little fighter. Like he puts on boxing gloves and he's always ready to fight. And if you know him, he might be. Okay? So call him the contender because he's ready to fight. And this is what Jude says. I've got a message for you. I was going to give you this letter. I'm going to talk about salvation. And it's a wonderful thing. But what I have to do is tell you that you need to fight. And if there ever was a time in history around Jesus' birth and that time frame afterwards was a time when they needed to fight. couple of hundred years after, Christianity became super popular for a short time. And then, as it went off into different places, what happened to people like Paul? I mean, think about it.
They died.
Well, they died, right? And what happened to... Who was in charge of the world at the time? Caesar. The Romans. And the Romans, under a very, very terrible person, soon after, called Nero, Caesar Nero, okay, he was one of their kings. He hated Christianity. And as he went to Rome, and as they found out more about Christianity and about who, what this did, he absolutely despised it. And so he did terrible things to the Christians. He used to take them, Christians, and he would dip them in wax, their whole entire body in hot wax. All right? Now that'd be painful. And his point was he wanted them to be in pain. He wanted to torture them. And he wanted it to take a long time. And so he dipped them in hot wax from head to toe. And then he tied them to stakes in his garden. And he burned them as torches. Because they believed in Christ. All right? Bad, terrible things. And it was like that for 200 or 300 years until Constantine came along and sort of changed how the Roman Empire looked at Christianity. But in those early days, it was a terrible time. The Romans, of course, what are the Romans famous for? What did they have that you can go to see today where they had mock naval battles and all kinds of crazy things that happened? Contenders that might go there. What's that famous building?
Coliseum.
The Colosseum, right? And in the Colosseum, you hear about gladiators. And they would take gladiators. They would have all different types of entertainment. And they had these whole sections they could flood areas and put boats in, and they did amazing things, all for entertainment. But there were times when, during Christian persecution, that they would take Christians and feed them to lions there. Watch them, the whole crowd would watch them as they were torn piece to piece. Or they would put in wild pack dogs, and they would take Christians and they would tie them up and sew them into leather bags, inside of leather bags, and watch them be torn and shredded because they were hungry and ravenous, and they'd watch them just shred these bags and then the people in pieces. Couldn't do anything to fight back. And they did it as entertainment. So it was a hard time to live as a Christian. So I think the word contend or fight for what you believe was true and real. All right? And you'd say, well, we've lived past those times. Those were barbarians back then. And truly, we have lived in a place in this country. America has come about in this place, and since the 1600s, people have come here for religious refuge. People have come here to do what they believe is right. But there is a great wave moving, and don't be shocked at who is in charge of it. Who do you think was in charge when Nero was killing Christians? Why did he hate them? Because Satan is in charge of this world. He is the prince of this world, and Jesus calls him that. He is given authority in this world, all right? Not complete authority, not authority above God, but he has authority in this world. And he is allowed to get to people oftentimes, not to the point of taking away their salvation, but oftentimes throughout history, people have lived through these very hard times. Okay, that beginning time when Christianity started right up, people were really, really, really focused on getting Christians out. And Satan was mad. He was angry because he thought he'd won. When he put Christ on the cross, he thought he won. He killed him. And when he rose again and he claimed victory over Satan and over death and over hell, now all of that was taken away and Satan was angry. And Jude is very aware of that. And Jude's going to write some unique things. Things that we don't see anywhere else in the Bible. Little tidbits of things to say that world outside of us is working hard to destroy. So be ready to fight, okay? Be ready to fight. And it's funny what is going to show up. Not funny as in haha, but funny as in unique, as in strange, how this great battle is going to happen. And you will see that it is much like our world today. Okay? If we finish up verse number 3, you contend for something. What are you contending for?
Your faith.
Your faith. Specifically, just your faith, yes. Fight for your faith. But, what else? How does he describe the faith?
That it was once delivered unto the saints.
Okay, so once and for all, there was a specific message given to us as Christians by the original apostles and the saints of old, okay, through the Bible. God worked through the Bible, through people's lives. And he put together a collection of these books. And he put originally the Jewish people in charge of collecting them. Okay? And they were ever persecuted for it. And still are today. All right, for doing that. For being obedient to God. He says that message, stand firm on your faith. Be ready to fight for your faith. All right? Something very subtle has happened. Next verse. We are on verse number 4, yes. Where we're looking at what happened. Nice and loud. Okay? What happened? Read that verse. What happened?
Take Jesus' word and they do nothing with it.
Okay. So they don't. Who are they, first of all? Who are these men? I'll give you. There's men. Okay? Now, where are these men? They're in the church. Okay? There are men in the church. They are more specifically claiming to know God. They claim to know God. But how are they living? Specifically, what are they doing?
Perverting his word.
Okay.
Licentiousness.
With licentiousness. Okay. Perverting God's word. And they're what? Denying the word of God. All right. So in the church, there were people. People that came in, that spent time with the Christians, that spent time with the people of God, said, I'm a Christian. And there was no fruit in their life. They did the wrong thing, and they didn't care. That's one of the big struggles, is they didn't care. You see, Christians, and we talked a little about this back a few weeks ago, Christians are become new creatures, right? If you are in Christ, you become a new creature. Does that mean you will never sin? No. Why won't you sin? Or why will you sin? Here, on earth, why do you sin? Because your flesh. Because your body, right? Your body. And there's nothing you can do right now to separate your body from who you are. You might have bad habits. You might have a habit of saying the wrong thing. Right? Sometimes people use it and they get on the computer and they write all kinds of mean, nasty things on the computer. Who cares? It's on the computer, right? But that computer is connected to your fingers, okay, when you put the words in, or your phone, or whatever, and that phone, that your fingers are connected to your personality that's connected to your spirit. And it disagrees if you are a believer, if you said those things and you shouldn't have said them, right? It disagrees. There's not unity there. But you will find that as a believer, all right, you will struggle. If Paul struggled with his body and his flesh, and he says he did greatly, who will deliver me from this body of death? He says, because I do what I wish I would not do. If Paul struggled and he got it and he understood it and he wrote 3/4 of the New Testament, all right? If he was one of those people who struggled, well, surely we're going to struggle. But there is a difference in a person who has the Spirit of God inside, who desires to do right, and their body is an impedance to them. It slows them down. Okay. There's a that's a battery. Isn't that nice? If I take a wire, and this is my positive, and this is my negative, and I connect it to this one, and I run a wire, and I go, whoop, what happens? It's a circuit. What's it going to do when you touch them together? Boom. It's going to spark an arc. You're going to go, psh, 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 depends on how much you got, you know, as you're doing it. It will heat the wire up. It will melt the wire. I've seen that happen. Okay. It'll make black things if you even get where you touched it to it. Okay. It's a direct short. Very powerful. You can deliver all the power you want. As much as that wire will handle, you can do it. If you had a big enough wire, that direct short would probably be able to handle it, okay? But when I put something in there, called a little resistor, or actually, and I do something like this, this is like a light bulb. Okay? Old-fashioned kind of light bulb. I put that light bulb in there, it creates an impedance. It slows down the current. It restricts the current. And it's not allowed to just go bang right to it. Okay? Your body in your life is like this. You could have all the power in the world. God's power is sitting right inside of you. Great power and potential sits inside of your spirit when you ask Him into your heart. But often our body is the impedance. It stops that, slows it down. It doesn't slow it down altogether, but the thing we struggle with physically slows it down. That great power, great potential we have, and we struggle with it, and we fight, and we falter, and we fail, but it's still there. Okay? It's not fake. It's real. And if you know God, you want to grow, you want to change, you want to become more like Him, and it's a process, and it's patience, and it takes time, okay? Doesn't happen overnight. These men that have come in have no intention of doing the right thing. They're not interested in that. They are interested in doing only what they want to do. Okay? There was a movement, in fact, they were so interested, there was a movement that said, if I'm a Christian, I've got my spirit here, and that's just my Christian spirit. And my body, it's like we're disconnected now. That was their movement. And they said, I can do whatever I want and I'm happy because God forgives me. And that's what Jude saw, is these people coming in and saying, I am going to use and take advantage of this forgiveness however I want, because it makes no difference what I do on my body. It's not my spirit. My spirit's going to go to heaven. My body doesn't matter. I can use it however I want and do whatever I want for however much I want. And Jude says, you miss the point if you think that's what it is. And Paul said that. You are missing the point if you think you're just going to use it as a license to sin and do whatever you want. Okay? These kind of people that come in that do not really seek God in their life, but they would like to just sort of fit into the Christian group. Okay? These kind of people are what he's saying. This is dangerous. These people are dangerous. Beware of them in the church. Be careful of thinking that way. Okay? Be careful of thinking that way. These men are ungodly and they don't care anything about what God's doing. Many of them had specifically sexual sins. Okay? We're in a climate in our world today where, just to give you an example, we'll talk about old television shows. The Flintstones. Everybody seen the Flintstones or some? Have you ever seen Fred and Wilma in their bedroom? Mm-hmm. And what do you see in their bedroom? Two beds. In every single show. Probably until the 70s or so. You watch I Love Lucy. That's an old show from the 50s. They don't sleep in the same bed. Not on the show. Because they never... They thought, we're not going to show this. This is not appropriate. And now, if you look at television shows, we've gone far, far past just showing a big bed, okay? Right? Far, far past. In fact, sex has become a thing that's saturated the society. Sin has become something that has saturated our society in many, many ways. So much so that when you grow up in it, you don't even know what it's like without it. If you don't have those references from back 50 years ago even, or 40 years ago, okay, if you don't have those references of what was considered appropriate at the time, all of those lines have been erased and wiped away and pushed away because the overwhelming change in society has become, this is all just fine. We don't care. This is right. We're going to do what we want. You can't tell us that there's right and wrong because I have my own right and wrong. Okay? It's become a fundamental shift. You are growing up in the generation where it is going to be much more and more tough, more and more and more tough to be a Christian, to stand up for what's right. You're going to have to make decisions in your life that your parents didn't have to make. Ones to say, I won't even be involved in that, or I can live without what my friends have. But you have to make those choices because your parents didn't even have those things when they grew up. Okay? Access to things online, television shows, things like that. They showed, when I was a kid, if what they had on television, okay, was always, I would say, most all the time, pretty family appropriate. Till like way, way late at night, maybe. And you only had very few channels. It was all on the rabbit ears that you had to move around, okay? And now, you get what you want, when you want it. You can pause it. You couldn't pause it. You had to be there to see Snoopy, the one time a year they showed Snoopy than the Easter Beagle or whatever, okay? Or the Great Pumpkin or whatever, okay? You had to be there because it was only going to be shown once. But now it's like you see everything whenever you want. You have full access to anything and everything. And I'm not saying everything's evil and everything's bad. But you have to make choices to battle, to fight, to contend against those things in your life, in your mind, and say, I won't do it. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be saturated with this all the time. You make those choices. Only you can make those choices. You will do that for your children. When you become adults, okay, you will have to do that in your household because you may or may not have seen the evil things and the evil side of what can be out there on the internet, on television. So much is available now. There's nothing, like, you don't even have to say, you say, I would like to watch whatever, and it's just there at any time, day or night. Okay. Access is complete to you guys. And don't think that that was a mistake. All right? If you want to saturate a world, then you fill it with things that will distract you from God. Right? And that's what Satan has done. Fill it with things that will distract you from God. And if you can distract someone for their entire life, hooray, he did it. He got it. He got you. If you want to be somebody and something in this Christian life, if you want to hunger and thirst after God, then you'll have to say, I'm going to make this choice and not do it. And I don't know what that is for you. Maybe that's something on Facebook, and you say, I'm just not going to do this, or it's not even Facebook, isn't even a thing anymore, right? Snapchat things, or you do whatever you do, okay? Either way, it's going to change so fast, your parents aren't going to be able to keep up with it, because they don't know. But you will see what people use it for. Okay? Even just the fact of, if I can completely absorb you into using your phone and living on your phone all the time, and take you away from studying the Word, time to pray, spending time with your family, having real conversations with your mouth, okay? Things like that that connect people. God made humans to do real connections. And I'm not saying you can't text people and do all, use technology is fine. But don't miss out on the way God created us and the good things in life. Enjoying nature, doing those types of things. Okay, don't miss out on those because of the distractions that are out there, that are available. Okay? All right, let's go to verse number 5. As we look, these people are out there. What's going to happen? He's got some examples of how this happened, okay, or happened in different groups. Verse 5.
Now I desire to remind you, though you are fully informed, that the Lord, who once for all saved a people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe.
Okay, he gives us a couple examples. First of all, he says, all right, if you want to separate yourself, you're going to be one of these Christians, okay, who's going to become a contender and fight. You can be like Job. Now, Job made a covenant, it says in Job 31. He made a covenant with his eyes, which says, and what his covenant was, he says, I'm not going to look at a woman. He says, I never did it. He said, I made a covenant with my eyes, made a promise. Was he a perfect man? No way. Not even Job, who was a fantastic guy. Okay? Even God says, you're one of the best on earth. Okay? Even he struggled with things. But that's one thing he did. Okay? Was he made a covenant with his eyes. And here's what Jude is saying. I've given you a couple examples. He said, when God went and took Israel out of Egypt and took them into the promised land, he saved them all. And it was a big picture of salvation. And then when he took them out into the desert, because they wouldn't believe, and he wandered them around for 40 years, what did he do with all the people that didn't believe? They wouldn't believe. He destroyed them. The next generation, except for the few believers, the next generation went into the promised land because the first generation would not believe God and his promises. Okay? So, he took them and separated them out. There's one example. By the way, we're going to get to this in just a minute. When he did that, who was a person who went through to the promised land? There were two people. They're leaders. Who led the people around Israel? Moses, Joshua, and Caleb. Three leaders. Moses was angry and showed it to the people of Israel. And God said, because you were angry, not just once, whatever times and however God he did it, and he was angry and he struck the rock and he got water out of it. God says, you will never go into the promised land to Moses. So only Joshua and Caleb went. God took Moses' body, well, he took Moses up into the hills, just on the one side of the promised land, and he got to see the promised land. Never set foot in it, but see it. And God took Moses' life up on the hills, up there. And God hid the body of Moses. accept that Satan knew where he was. Satan wanted the body. Why did Satan want that body? What's a body going to do for him?
If he showed
the people, what could he do with that?
Maybe he could make it alive.
Well, maybe he could make it alive. But say he can't make it alive, what else could he do with it? What does he do with almost everything for us?
Destroys it.
Well, he destroys it. He distracts with it. So what could he have done? Make a shrine to Moses' body. Let's go worship Moses' body. Moses was the great leader. Right? Even that, even what God did for his whole life, Satan wanted it. How do we know that? We're going to find out in the book of Jude. Okay? What happened? All right? So the Israelites are the first one, first example. Second one is verse 6. Okay, so now he's talking about, first was Israel, next are the angels. And we don't really have time for this tonight, but if we were to go into Revelation chapter 12, you would read a story about a woman who was about ready to give birth. And that woman represents Israel. And who is waiting, standing right by, is a great dragon waiting to devour the child. Well, what child would that great dragon like to devour from Israel? Who does he want to stop? Someone born in Israel. Maybe Bethlehem. There you go. Okay. He wants to stop Jesus. So he's waiting to get that baby. God saves it. It tells that story of it. But it also tells the story of this great red dragon who it names specifically as Satan, that he takes his tail and wipes a third of the stars out of the sky. Now, prophecy works in such a way where time is melded together. It's like a mountain range. You drive up out west, you go and you look and you say, hey, there's a mountain range. Look at all those mountains out there. Nice, perfect line of them. There's not a line of mountains. When you get there, you get to one. 50 miles later, there's another one. 25 miles later, hey, there's two more. But you can't see it. When you look at the picture, it looks like this beautiful range of mountains. But as you drive up through it, you see one, and you go miles and miles later, there's another one. Okay? It's exactly the way prophecy works in that when God shows a picture of the way things are going to be, the prophet writes down what he sees. Okay, just like in Revelation, John writes down what he sees, this dragon, and he's doing these things in Israel. And it's showing the picture of time, across time. And when he wipes the stars out of heaven, a third of them fall down to the earth. Who are they? What are the stars? The fallen angels that Satan takes with him. Did that happen after Jesus was born? No, that happened before. But as he's looking at the picture is just like a like that mountain range, and it just looks like one story. Okay? And so, this is these angels that come down. Jude mentions the angels as the second example and says, the angels that wouldn't believe, they are bound up for eternal damnation, really. Even angels that God created to be perfect, those that fell were separated out. Okay? There were examples of them. Because he's trying to give examples of how can we live in this church and there are people who are not real believers in a church. He's saying Israel had not people. God saved them, took them out of Egypt and saved them. There were people in there that didn't believe. The angels fell from heaven, some of them didn't believe. Okay? And his last example, verse number 7, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them, like in manner, giving themselves over to fornication, going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. God, he said, Sodom and Gomorrah were one of those societies where sex had saturated everything. Everything about it was that. So much so that it didn't matter what you did, to whom. Okay? Terrible things happened. Bad things happened to people. People were raped, and there's stories of people being raped. There's stories of fathers giving up their daughters to be raped. Okay? In the Bible, in Sodom and Gomorrah. Bad things happened there. And God punished that. He separated them out and said, he destroyed them with fire. And he says, God will do that. He will separate those people out. That's what he does. He separates those people out over time. But beware and be careful. You are out there to fight. You are out there to be vigilant. You are out there to do what you need to do. Okay? Verse number 8. Likewise, also these filthy dreamers, okay, these people that are out there doing what they want to do, defile the flesh, despise dominion. They hate authority. Okay? People hate authority. And speak evil of dignities. They don't want to listen to anybody. Because they want to do what they want to do. Yet Michael, the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke thee. But these speak evil of those things which they know not. But what they know naturally, as brute beasts in those things, they corrupt themselves." All right? So this is where this is the unique things that Jude has in his books. All right? He says there's an angel, an archangel Michael. All right? And if you were to go look up the archangel Michael in the same chapter with the story where Satan tears down the stars out of heaven, where he's waiting for the woman to give birth, okay, in that very same story, the archangel Michael comes, and he is the great and powerful, one of the top angels that God puts in charge of the final battle, okay, against Satan and all of those demons, all of those fallen angels, right? He is powerful. And if God makes an angel, he is powerful. And yet, he says, Satan, when this dispute happened over the body, Satan came up to the mountain where Moses' body was and said, "I want this body. It's mine." And the archangel Michael showed up and said, "You can't have it." But he didn't say, "Because I said so." He said, because he knows how powerful Satan is, he said, "The Lord rebuke you. God says you can't have it. I am a messenger from God, and God says you can't have it." Right? So we know Satan's a very powerful being. He has worked throughout history. We've seen him battle and all these different things, whether it was Israel or the fallen angels or Sodom and Gomorrah, whether he can saturate a society, whether he's working right in the group of people that are saved from Egypt, the Israelites. He's working constantly to tear things down. So don't be surprised that you have to fight for your faith. Don't be surprised that you will see it infiltrate through this world. Don't be surprised if you have to stand up for what is right. Always go back to the standard of God's word. It will never fail you. If you believe in me, if you believe in a pastor, if you believe in a leader, and you don't check it in the Word, be aware. You can be easily led aside. And that's being used in many, many ways. That's one of the reasons why we tell you, study the Word, work in the Word. We do Bible study so that you can start to know and understand it's not so simple and easy. You're not going to necessarily have this great, sweet, wonderful life where everything flows in your way. You will have to be smart and wise as this next generation comes in. You will have to be the smart ones. You will have to be wise. You have to know what to do. And you will have to be willing to fight for your faith. Stand up for what you believe. Because this whole battle has been happening outside our world, outside this dimension, anyways, by Satan and by the angels and these things. And God has been over all this, and it fits in the plan. But God is watching and carefully keeping you. But you have to be willing to fight. You have to be willing to stand up and say, I want to do this. I will follow you. All right. Be careful not to be taken aside by these. We're going to learn a little bit more next time about these people who have infiltrated. What's going to happen? Okay, got some different stories and different perspectives by Jude. How does he know this stuff? Well, think about who he grew up with. How does he get the depth of understanding? Well, he seems to be able to have a little bit of extra connection. Okay, a little bit of depth of knowledge that you don't see all these stories in a lot of other places. Okay, no doubt God's given him some specific things to illustrate his examples, to be aware of the great battle that's happening outside. Okay, thank you very much. You're dismissed.